The Trans-Pacific Yacht Race, better known as TransPAC, stretches over more than 2,000 miles from California to Hawaii. Dozens of yachts and their teams compete in the long-distance sailing race, which has been running every other year since 1906. This year marked the 50th running of TransPAC, and 90 boats competed, ranging in size from 30 feet to 100 feet in length. For the first time in the race's history, one of those boats never made it to port. 2 days into the race, a ship called the OEX began taking on water in the middle of the night. Roy Disney owns the Piwacket, which responded to a distress call from the sinking OEX and rescued its crew. That prevented him from finishing the race, but he flew to Hawaii for the closing ceremony and talked about the rescue with HBR's Ryan Finnerty.
Roy, could you give us a sense for people who aren't sailors what goes into preparing for this race?
A lot. You're preparing people, you're preparing food, you're preparing the boat, you're preparing all the parts of the boat, you're preparing logistics for getting people to and from, you're preparing the return of the boat to California in my case. It's a lot. And the irony of TransPAC is that it's a long race and you can't get to that buoy soon enough, but as soon as you pass that buoy, you're already thinking, how would I do the next one? That's the attraction. This would have been my 23rd TransPAC, which is a record. Gary Weissman and I would have owned the record for most TransPACs, and that's consecutively too. So that's a lot.
What are some of the specific concerns, maybe with particular attention towards crew safety?
It's always a concern. The reality is you're on your own when you leave the dock, and everybody understands that the ocean is always bigger than you are, so you respect that. And the other understanding is that there may not be any help. In this case, we were lucky because we happened to be right behind the boat that sank, which is a good thing. But that may not always happen. So you have to be prepared. In fact, TransPAC will not let you go on this race unless you prove to them that you're capable.
Could you give us a little bit of an overview how it played out that night when you got the distress call and what happened to that crew?
Okay, so we spent the first day drifting in very light winds. We only traveled about 110 miles in 24 hours, which is awful. But then we finally got out into the offshore wind around 6, 7 o'clock, and we were moving really good, finally. Everybody was excited to have the sails up doing 15, 16 knots. And I was just starting to wake up for my watch. One of my friends was putting his foul weather gear on down below. Now, we leave the radio on, but at a low volume because guys are sleeping. And just happened to hear the pitch of the voice. You can always tell when somebody's under duress. And the pitch of the voice was just high and fast. And then I heard the words OEX, which I knew to be a competitor of ours, direct competitor. And I asked my friend, Benny, I said, did you hear what I just heard? And he said, yeah, that was OEX. And I said, where are they? And when the sun went down, they were 30 miles south of us. So my immediate thought was, we can't help. We're too far away. But then we woke up our navigator, and sure enough, they were 2 miles in front of us. So we just altered course slightly and sailed down to them and then sort of played it as it laid out. Took our sails down, turned the motor on. They launched their life rafts as soon as they saw us. This is 2:30 in the morning, by the way, 2:40. And you're still on LA time at that point. So, and they used the life rafts to transfer themselves from their sinking boat onto our boat. You wouldn't have wanted to put the two boats together. That's dangerous. And everything worked out well.
What condition was OEX in when you arrived
on the scene? They left their mainsail up, which is a black sail. There were no lights on board, so it was kind of looking like a ghost ship to me. And my understanding was there was about a foot left to the deck level before it was sinking. But it looked like it was going to go down. And they were, believe me, ecstatic to get off that boat. You know, I credit them with a lot of things. They didn't panic. They did all the things in all the right order. And frankly, climbing into a life raft at 2:33 in the morning in rough seas 300 miles offshore is pretty courageous. It's a leap of faith. You know, you don't know what's going to happen after you get in that life raft because you're giving up the one thing that you're supposed to stay on till the bitter end, the boat. Stay with the boat. The guys were quiet. And I suspect because it's a traumatic event, I suspect there was some trauma. And not a lot of guys did a lot of talking after they got on the boat. We made sure that they were downstairs and they were warm because they'd been sitting in water for some time. And got them food and made sure that their blood sugar got back to normal. And it was They were in shock, no question.
And are you able to do all the ships, you're able to see their each position using GPS, or how did you know where they were?
So we use a tracker device called Yellow Brick, but it's delayed by 4 hours. But we can sort of interpolate where boats are based on that. And there's also a thing called AIS, Automated Ship Identification System. And within a 25-mile circle, we can see any boat around us that has AIS on. So we, you know, we knew right away.
Is there any hesitation, it being a race, about stopping to help?
None whatsoever. In fact, rule number one of the racing rules of racing is save lives. Save your fellow crewmen. Save your fellow boats.
Did they have any idea that you were on your way, or was that a surprise to them when you showed up?
No. The only thing they had an idea was that they were sinking, and they made a general radio call and hoping somebody would answer. But no, they didn't know where we were.
Do we have any idea what happened, what caused the boat to start taking on water?
Not specifically. In talking to Chuck Clay, who was driving the boat, he said he was driving normally and there was a loud bang and then he had no steering left. So they didn't, obviously at night you can't see anything in the water, and apparently there is stuff in the water. And it's a miracle we don't hit it. Of course, we had this tsunami in Japan, and I think 4 years ago was the worst it has ever been. But there is, of course, in the Great Pacific High, the Great Gyre, a ton of stuff. And it floats around, and sometimes it breaks loose of the circulation and floats south to us. Or, but yeah, my first year I did it, we might have seen one piece of rope or netting or a bag every other day. And now we see one an hour. And that's when we can see them in the daylight. Who knows what we're sailing by at night? So,
what kind of precautions can you take against that kind of marine debris?
Just hope that your bills are paid and you've got good luck and your insurance is paid up. No, there's nothing really. I mean, I've done, like I said, a lot of transpacs, and we've woken up in the morning and had plastic bags wrapped around the keel, big ropes that we've had to stop and back down and get off the boat. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. But some pieces are bigger than others. For instance, it was Maserati that broke off their port bow by hitting something that they claimed was a meter and a half high in the water. God knows what that was. But they're going 25, 26 knots, and even if they saw it in time, I don't know what they could have done to avoid it, but that must have been an impact. So yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. But 4 years ago, there were docks, boats, containers, logs. You know, a third of Japan was in the water. But we think they hit something, but that's just my conjecture. And what happened was the bottom of the rudder, which goes through the hull, had broken loose and was now swaying back and forth, cutting an even bigger hole in the bottom of the boat. They tried to stop it by putting buckets on top of the hole, but the one guy said he sat on the bucket and it shot him, you know, 10 feet in the air. So there was no stopping the water at that point.
You mentioned this was the 50th running of the Transpac, and this is the first incident of this kind that's ever happened. What do you attribute to that pretty sterling safety record?
Well, again, the fact that sailors have to prove that they're capable of doing this event, and Transpac as a board vets all the boats. And there's an extensive inspection process to make sure that all the pieces are in place. There's safety at sea seminars that train sailors how to deal with these situations, because the reality is you are on your own. And that's a general understanding amongst all sailors who go offshore. You have to be responsible for yourself and your welfare. In my case, I had three guys who had done several round the world Volvo Ocean races. That's not a bad thing, but not everybody has that or can have access to those kinds of people. But the reality is equally the same for everybody.
Right before we started talking, you had a brief encounter with the spouse of one of the men that you helped save. What was that like?
She doesn't have the words. It's very emotional. It's a very emotional thing. And I could tell that her husband is still thinking about it. In fact, he admitted that. He still thinks about it. It's a very traumatic thing. I can't even imagine, you know, seeing the thing that you love, that you live for, disappear underneath your feet. It's pretty profound.
Do you think those guys will get back out on the water?
Absolutely. It's in your blood. It's in your blood. You know, they can't say thank you enough, and I understand that. But to me and to us, first of all, it happened very fast. From the 15 minutes from when we got the call to when we arrived on site, which is pretty fast. But there's no talking or discussing, should we, shouldn't we. That's not a choice. We just did what we had to do, and I am 100% positive, had it, the roles been reversed, they would have done exactly the same thing. It's not a debate, it's what you do.
HPR's Ryan Finnerty talking story with Roy Disney about rescue, trauma, survival, and helping out. Disney's the owner of the yacht Piwacket, which helped rescue 9 men from a sinking ship during the Transpac long-distance sailing race this year. We'll have links to photos and more information at hawaiipublicradio.org.